Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Lori Townsend.
Hello, thanks for joining us today. We're going to be discussing Alaska's financial future. Alaska has had an interesting fiscal ride through the decades, from a time when the purchase of the territory from Russia was called Seward's Folly to the discovery of rich oil resources in Prudhoe Bay, which made the state very cashy fairly quickly. Alaskans have enjoyed the benefits of oil revenues for decades, but production is in decline at a time when the population is growing, so the state must either ramp up production or slow down spending. We're in deficit spending now. My guest today is Cliff Groh. Cliff is an attorney who has worked in the past on financial matters for the state legislature and as a special assistant to the Commissioner of Revenue. Cliff is also the board chair of Alaska Common Ground, a bipartisan organization that tackles big issues in the state. Thanks for being here, Cliff.
Pleasure to be here with you, Lori.
So on October 4th, Alaska Common Ground held a day-long forum at the Lusac Library Wilda Marson Theater to discuss what should be done to help Alaska get out of deficit mode. Cliff, the Common Ground gathering was a full day, but this is a big issue to tackle. Who showed up? How well was it attended? And how did you get things underway?
We had more than 200 people attend this forum in person. Others heard it on a live stream. It's also been video recorded, and we are now posting the segments of the forum, video recordings of the forum, at our website at www.akcommonground.org. And people who were attending were people who tended to care and were concerned about this. We were fortunate enough at Alaska Common Ground to be able to partner with the Institute of Social and Economic Research, ICER, at the University of Alaska. And we're able to do a major effort, as you said, all day long to try to get people to understand the facts of Alaska's fiscal and economic situation and also consider the range of options for dealing with those facts, some of which are unpleasant and can be scary, as you've suggested.
Mm-hmm. It seems sort of unavoidable that we'll continue to have growing expenses. The population is growing fairly quickly in Alaska. How was that basic issue approached?
Well, we saw that there are increasing and growing demands and obligations in the state budget, as well as you pointed out, for more than a quarter century, a long-term decline in oil production in Alaska. There's been some recent discussion, and as there was at the forum, of maybe trying to help stop the drop, or even some wild speculation, in my view, of finding another Prudhoe Bay field, which is a very rare event. It's the largest oil field ever found in North America. It was discovered in late 1967, and it is still one of the top 20 oil fields ever found in the world. It's just a very, very unusual and unlikely that would occur again, but hey, great. But if it would happen. But people sort of focus more on the more likely possibility that oil production will continue to fall. Oil production is now well under a third of it was less than 25 years ago, and has had a steady decline over the past quarter century, so that the pipeline carries less than a third, as I said, of the volume each year than it used to in the late 80s at the peak. And this is a problem, as you can see from some of the graphs I've brought, because the combination of the lower oil revenues combined with some higher spending over the past 10 years has led Alaska to have or been running deficits of more than $1 billion. And the recent lower oil prices suggest if the oil prices stayed, for example, at the level they are right now this week and all year long through the fiscal year that ends on June 30th of 2015, there would be more than a $2.5 billion deficit this year in unrestricted general funds, which is what people usually talk about when they talk about the budget.
Well, let's look at some of those figures that you've brought for us. This first one here is about that very issue, the lower oil revenues combined with higher spending, why we're in the problem that we're in right now.
Right. And this was a graphic prepared by Professor Gunnar Knapp, professor of economics and the director of ICER, who I've worked closely with during the organization of this forum. And what it shows is that the budget is substantially higher now than it was 10 years ago, although it's dropped the last 2 years. It's still substantially higher than it was, more than twice as high as it was 10 years ago. And the operating budget has grown, and the capital budget also went up as well. And the other critical thing to learn about this is that in the last few years, the definition of deficits is spending more than you're taking in, and the spending has exceeded the revenues. And that's particularly likely to continue, as I said, if oil prices stay in the 90s and closer to $95 a barrel. The budget is built this year, Lori, on an assumption or a projection that the price of oil be $105. Now it's below $90 a barrel, and even if it averaged $95 a barrel, there would be a deficit of over $2 billion.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what unrestricted versus restricted funds are. We have another colorful graphic laying out the unrestricted general fund revenues and also part of the budget.
Sure, history. And this is a graphic that was prepared by the Legislative Finance Division, who were the budget experts for the state legislature. And this was, I thought, was a particularly good graphic because it starts way back before oil started flowing through the pipeline, way back to 1975. Back when
we had little money.
And people say, how long ago was that? I says, well, I was still in college back in 1975. That's how long ago it was. The pipeline didn't flow for another 2 years. And this is shows the budget and the components of the budget and the revenues from the period of 1975, and it runs out to projections all the way to 2022, almost 10 years from now. And what it shows is wild swings. In the green would be the revenues, going up and down, and wild swings in the budget. And so there are sort of bars here that we can show. The dark blue bars are the main part of the operating budget. It's called the agency operations. And you can see that it went up and up during the 80s and then fell some a little bit in the 90s and then went up substantially in the 2000s. The lighter blue bar right above it is something called statewide operating, which includes things like some bond repayments, some retirement assistance, and recently some payments for the ACES tax credits. And you notice that was sort of disappeared in the 90s, but has been a substantial part of the budget the last 10 years, although dropping the last couple of years. The yellow is the capital budget, and you'll note that was really small for some periods of Alaska history when Alaska didn't have much money in the 90s. But went up substantially. There were some pretty big bars there in the last 10 years. And then finally, the orange bar, part of the bar, is probably the most interesting in some ways. It's either surplus or deficit. In big years, it's what you save. Above the line. So above the line's good for an orange.
Below the line,
but you'll notice
good.
The last 3 years, yeah. And also we had some of these years in the 90s, and the last 3 years particularly, the deficits show up in the below the line orange, which is sort of where we dip into Alaska savings accounts and reserves.
And that, of course, as you just said, makes us dip into those reserve funds, which impacts what kind of rates we'll have going forward and what kind of interest they can generate. And
that, but also, of course, Lori, it's sort of like you, occasionally, or people you know. Some people have, had hard times, lost jobs, got their hours cut back at work, and maybe they try to make ends meet by dipping into savings. But of course, at some point, if the savings are all gone, you're in a much harder place. And Alaska, and the next graphic tries to show some of the projections about how that might affect Alaska and where that history is.
And so this outlines two different funds. Describe those for us.
One is the Constitutional Budget Reserve, which is in the Constitution, so it's harder to spend. The other one is the Statutory Budget Reserve. It's only created by statute, and so it's easier to spend. But also, the most important fact is the Constitutional Budget Reserve is much larger. It's the dark blue bars in this chart and the portion of the bars. And the red is the Statutory Budget Reserve. So what you see is that and this has history to the left and projections to the right, with the present about the middle. So you see that the reserves are pretty large, and this is on a per Alaskan basis of, now they'd be over in the current fiscal year, which is fiscal year 15, given the way that the accounting system works, they're over $10,000 per Alaskan. This doesn't count the permanent fund. But you'll notice, as you'll see, Lori, going down, going forward, they keep falling pretty sharply to less than 10 years from now. By fiscal year 2023, they go to zero. And so that would be the situation. The person who's lost their job, trying to live on savings, and their savings get exhausted. Well, our savings under these projections, based on the current revenue forecast, a simple 2% growth, and the operating budget, the main part of the operating budget, agency operations, and assuming a flat capital budget. Obviously, if you change those assumptions and you cut the budget more, you could have more savings over time. Also, another possibility you didn't mention is, of course, having new revenues.
Right.
Alaska is unique in the country, is the only state in the union that has neither a statewide sales tax that's general, right, beyond things like fuel or alcohol,
nor
an individual income tax of any kind. Every other state in the country has at least one of those two items,
yes,
and a number of them,
both.
Of course, have both.
Yes.
Alaska had an income tax until 1980 when it got repealed in the first flush of the big oil money.
And we've discussed that before. Governor Hammond, I believe, wanted to keep it in just at $1 per year so it would be easier for the legislature to bring it back up.
He later described that as not having that happen as perhaps the greatest or one of the very greatest mistakes of his public life.
Yeah, it'd be really hard to bring that up now and convince Alaskans that we need to do that.
Right.
The big cost drivers of the budget.
This is about the
Did you take those in separate chunks or
how
were they discussed?
We had experts on the various big categories. And these are, this graphic only looks forward, or starts in FY14, so it doesn't have that long history.
Right.
But it runs to fiscal year 22, the same time period, a little bit under 10 years on this. And it just says, what are the big things that make the budget grow? And what are the big things we spend money on now? And remember, the operating budget is the largest part of the budget. So this is the three elements of the operating budget. Kindergarten through 12 education without retirement, and that's what the lighter blue colors bars are. Then the darker blue is Medicaid, and Medicaid is a program to help Alaskans, and so there are getting to be more Alaskans with disabilities, and that tends to drive up the costs. And so you'll see how Medicaid keeps growing substantially under this projection. And then the other category would be retirement assistance, which is to help deal with the extra cost of retired state and local government employees. And if you just look at those three categories I've just described, K through 12 education, Medicaid, and retirement, and you go out less than 10 years by fiscal year 2022, you have those three elements of the budget going from about 60% of the budget today to over 80%. Well over 80%, and of course that would leave very little for other things. Everything else the state does, ranging from state troopers to social workers to bridge inspectors to road crews.
Right.
And so that's an important thing to understand about what the big elements in the budget are now, how much they're growing given current projections, and finally, how difficult it is to cut the budget. Some people say, hey, Cliff, why don't we just, make the legislators, have a much less fancy building or cut the legislative staff salaries by 20%? And you get a sense of that's not really where the big spending is. It might be some of the stuff that irritates Alaskans the most, but it's not where the big money is.
And it's hard to get these three big cost drivers whittled back, as we said before, the population's growing, these things are going to continue to grow.
As you also know, Lori, there are a number of Alaskans who want particular elements of the budget to grow, whether it's in the operating budget, there's a lot of people who are pushing for higher spending on schools, and then of course, there's the capital budget.
Favorite capital
budget. You're right, a lot of people want to have build the Susitna-Wantana Dam, and have talked about the state spending billions of dollars on that, perhaps. Maybe they talk about borrowing the money and paying it back. Some questions about how that would work. Some people talk about, as you said, the Kinnickarm Bridge or Kinnickarm Crossing. Other people have talked about the gas lines. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's multiple proposals for gas lines, and some people talk about
Cliff,
substantial.
Cliff, won't that save us if we build the gas lines?
There was some discussion of that, and that's a real iffy proposition. We had a very good presentation by Deputy Commissioner of Strategic Finance, Michael Pawlowski, and he talked about the possibilities there. even he would acknowledge their challenges as well as opportunities. And they've talked about the gas line here in Alaska for a long time, ever since the 70s. There used to be three companies in the mid-70s running around the state promoting three different routes. It's very difficult to build the gas line. There are fiscal and economic and engineering challenges, and it's very tricky and risky for Alaskans to place all their eggs in that fiscal basket that will save the state, for all those reasons.
Was it difficult? The form was just a couple of days after Alaskans received more than $1,800 from the permanent fund.
Permanent fund dividend, I want to stress.
Permanent fund dividend,
right?
Absolutely.
And I say that with some authority, Lori, as one of the half dozen Alaskans probably most responsible for creating it. I was the legislative staff member that was worked the most on the permanent fund dividend legislation in 1982, when the per capita permanent fund dividend that we have today got adopted. And so, yeah, that was just coincidental.
Well, of course, it was. But did that impact the discussion at all? How difficult is it to get people to seriously believe that we have some fiscal uncertainty on the horizon and that this will have to be addressed when they've just received more than $1,800?
Sort of a psychological Alaska disconnect. There's the sort of financial Alaska disconnect because of the absence of general statewide taxes, that when somebody moves to Alaska, they're usually sort of more of a drain in the sense that they don't pay taxes for sort of the services they use, or driving on the roads, or maybe sending their kids to school, or all kinds of other services they get from the state. But there's also, which I think you've identified right there, Lori, is a psychological Alaska disconnect. Alaskans do not appreciate the precariousness of the state's financial situation, nor do they fully appreciate just how unstable the fiscal system is here, which relies so much on oil. And of course, oil production, as we already discussed, is dropping. And recently, oil prices have been low, as we've also already discussed. And those two factors together make it a lot trickier and more of a concern than I think some Alaskans understand.
It seems that the future looks as if we will continue to see lower oil prices also because of the glut of production that we're seeing both in the lower 48 and across the world in other countries.
And that, the greater supply than people thought, Lori, is certainly a factor. The other one is a weaker than expected and predicted economic demand for oil. There was, for a while, a large surge of demand for oil out of places like China. But as a lot of people know, the economy has not exactly been going great guns around the globe recently. And so as a result, there's just less demand than people thought. And both those factors have helped push down the price of oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about, you spent the day on this topic and clearly got to some ideas about what should be done in the future. What came out of the day's discussion as far as what are the areas that people I have identified that seem most likely to be able to work with and get something done?
Well, there were a whole variety of options and alternatives discussed, and I think that some of the press coverage tended to focus on just a few, but there were all kinds of possibilities discussed. There were discussions of ways of thinking about cutting the budget, both in the operating budget and the capital budget. There were all kinds of there's discussion of things like whether they would be bringing back taxes, general broad-based taxes to Alaska, whether an income tax or a sales tax. There were discussions of some use of permanent fund income in the budget, which has not happened in significant ways right now. And then there were also some, you know, wilder other kinds of ideas thrown out, even including things like splitting up the permanent fund into individual royalty trusts so that each Alaskan would own a certain piece of the permanent fund corpus. To other ideas like adoption of spending limits, more strict and tougher spending limits, that in part would try to make the cliff less steep, would make the, so you wouldn't like have substantial budgets up until one year where all of a sudden you went to zero or you went to some sort of cut by 50%. So it would try to manage a less steep and more gentle downward glide in the state's budget. All those kinds of ideas were discussed, And what we're hoping is this is the beginning of a conversation, not the end. Because as I told one of the participants in this forum, when I was trying to get him to come and he agreed, I said, hey, it's possible that you and I will play in the Super Bowl next year. So that's sort of the same possibility that the Alaska legislature would solve this entire problem during the next legislative session. Those are both probably about the same odds. Neither one of them is illegal. It just seems unlikely.
Seems either one of those slightly unlikely.
Either one of those occur. He being a man like myself of over 50 years old.
What ideas, to your mind, you've dealt with these issues for decades. What ideas really rose to the top and seem the most viable for the future?
Not really so much. Lori, I wouldn't want to talk about it in terms of viability. What I want to talk about is in terms of seriousness. And I guess I think that the options come out of some combination or some reliance on a single one of several things. Cutting the budget, raising taxes, raising revenues in some way, either on people or on oil companies. It's harder to do that on oil companies than it was 30 years ago when you had more oil to tax going through the pipeline. Or some use of permanent fund income. Those are sort of the possibilities in sort of strict form, unless you went to some sort of wilder idea of splitting up the permanent fund, like I said, with individual accounts. But all that would do, or what would that mostly do, is allow you to get back to a world where you had taxes for the services, having Alaskans pay taxes for the services they get. But I think what the forum did was get people to focus more on what the real live options are and maybe avoid some of the easier, cheaper solutions that some people have thrown around. Like some people have suggested, and this was discussed at the forum, hey, how come we can't be like Norway? And by that, I think people mean, hey, why can't we just have a big savings account and not worry about pesky things like budget cuts or taxes?
Just live off the
and just live off the earnings, sort of clip coupon. So the economic term would be a rentier. And of course, that was a lot easier if you started back in 1976 with that kind of plan, right? Where you saved a whole bunch of money and the state saved a bunch of money and had even higher taxes on the oil companies. It's harder to pull that plan off now. And people sort of, that forum helped people understand that that simple Norway plan is harder to do for Alaska, particularly since the other part of the Norway plan that a lot of people don't like to talk about is people in Norway pay some of the highest taxes
very
in the world.
Taxes.
We're in Alaska where some of the people pay some of the lowest taxes in the world.
Are they, though, funding government just off the interest from their...
No, not at all. Some people imagine that could happen. But in part, a large part of the funding of the government and the bulk of it comes from taxes in Norway, which, as I said, are so high. Another thing that people thought about, and I hoped, and it seemed to me that some people started to get a better understanding, wouldn't work as well. Some people say they have a plan of the Chilkoot Charlie's plan, and this famous bar in Anchorage with the famous slogan of, we cheat the other guy and pass the savings on to you.
I don't think that's a viable plan.
No, but some people have this idea that we'll just cut the parts of the budget that I don't like. But the problem is, Lori, of course, that
getting consensus on
what
parts.
Yeah, different people in Alaska like different parts of the budget.
Absolutely.
And one person's fat might be another person's vital program. And I think that it also came out at the forum that a lot about where you stand on this depends sort of where you sit or where you wake up. Mm-hmm. That somebody sitting in a village in, say, Shagaluk, where there tend to be lower incomes and a lot of reliance on subsistence lifestyles, is going to see the potential solutions to Alaska's fiscal future perhaps somewhat differently from someone who wakes up in a very fancy house on Anchorage's hillside.
Is that something that really, do you think, separates Alaska to a great degree from a lot of other states who are dealing with fiscal problems that are much larger than Alaska's? Currently, we have this amazing geographic range and different climate zones and different lifestyles all across the state. How much of that impacts how difficult this is going forward?
I think it is in some ways harder because although the population of Alaska is only about 700,000 people, there's a wide range, as you suggested, of opinions among those 700,000 people in a wide range of different situations. It's also true beyond the enormous variety and diversity among Alaska's population that makes this problem politically hard to solve. Another factor is the transients in Alaska. Recent evidence has shown that every year about 10% of Alaska's population has just arrived in the state, and another 10% is planning to leave.
It's astounding.
So there's this very much of a more of a transient population here, both among that seems to affect both among the voters and among elected officials. That some of the things we talked about at the forum are ideas that might, if adopted, bring some pain now, but perhaps reduce the pain out there in that 2022, 2023, 2024, 10 years from now time frame. Mm-hmm. But some Alaskans might be thinking, why am I taking a hit now when I won't be in Alaska in 2024?
Right. Well, we have to wrap up, Cliff, but in the last few seconds, are there other forums planned by Alaska?
We are looking into that possibility, and follow our website at www.akcommonground.org to learn more about our future plans. Thank
you,
Lori.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here today, and thank you for joining us for this edition of Alaska Edition. We'll be back next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.